Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right. For just $20, we'd read your name here and say something nice about you. Or if you want to help our legal fund, go to GoFundMe.com/Nerd and Tie. That's how episodes like this are brought by listeners like you. And I do say listeners because there's nobody in this episode.
On this episode of Nerd and Tie, we know who will star in Good Omens. Obi-Wan Kenobi movie is in development. Death Note live action was a thing. Avalon Expo head leaves in the middle of the con. GeekCon happened. And the mailbag and more.
Woo-hoo. Oh, yeah.
I am one of your hosts, Benjamin Proc, and with me are sweet as cotton candy grapes, Nick Izumi.
How you doing, everybody?
And spicy like jalapenos, Trey Dorn.
I am the meatball that knocks.
Seems legit.
So, diving right in, because all three of us are huge fans of Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett's novel Good Omens, we now know who is starring
in the TV adaptation.
In the TV adaptation. But
yay!
So Michael Sheen and David Tennant have been cast as the angel and the demon, and Sheen is best known for his roles in the Twilight Saga and Masters of Sex.
I like him as Wesley Snipes in 30 Rock.
And if you're listening to our show and you don't know who David Tennant is, I have questions.
Same? I was really happy with, I don't follow Sheen that closely, but when I heard Tennant was playing Crowley, I just got a big smile on my face because it's such a good good casting.
He doesn't look like what I'd picture, but I'm happy with it. Like,
yeah, I'll take it. I've always just had a very loose headcanon as to their like appearance. So
I don't know. I always pictured someone with like a rounder face. Like, I mean, it's literally like that specific in my head.
It's never been that specific for me. I just
the name of the guy who played him in the radio show, but actually he's if you look up the, like, I know who the actor is, I just can't remember his name, but if you look up the Good Omens the radio show version, and that's pretty much my like dream casting for a live, but I'll take David Tennant, hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Tennant can do smarm, and I know he will own in this, because you got to have a little bit of smarm with this character. Only a little, though.
I'm very excited for this, especially because Neil Gaiman himself is actually, like, wrote the episodes and is show running. And actually, I did, I saw a thing where I forget what it was, but someone or something had been toting Neil Gaiman's Good Omens. And he himself came out and was like, no. No, Terry Pratchett was a huge, huge part of this. You are not going to dismiss him at all from this.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's,
yeah,
because
he discussed with Terry Pratchett prior to Pratchett's death how he would adapt the series, like the show, the book as a series. So yeah, it's Terry Pratchett's influence is a major part of this.
Yes. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we were excited for this before knowing who's going to be in it. That's lots of fun. Now I just wait with bated breath and hope to God that the child actor they get to play Adam isn't terrible. Yes. That's all I need.
Yeah,
that's gonna be the big deal.
I'll also be excited when they do when they figure out the horsemen.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Be very good. He's like, I cannot wait to see war. Oh.
Look, I'm not saying Catherine Tate, but.
But.
you know, a guy can dream.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Who would you like to see as the horseman?
I don't really have. I don't have anyone really like picked out. I guess. Yeah, I haven't actually given it that much thought.
I'm just saying Matt Frewer as Death would be great.
Mm-hmm. As long as they get Death's voice right, I'll be okay.
Well, they won't, but still.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks it would be, I mean, I know he's in everything, but he's one of those actors who I love being in everything. I think it would be really funny if Martin Freeman was Adam's father. Like, not a huge part for him. I just love the idea of him doing the hospital scene at the beginning of the book.
Oh, I completely agree.
Just him
agree.
Awkwardly. Yeah.
Yep.
Like,
ironically, the actor who I would really like to see in that role, if not, Martin Freeman, I think would be great, but I think that maybe a more realistic choice.
Fair.
Would be Mark Heap. And you might not know who he is. He actually played Aziraphale in the audiobook version, but
nice.
Not the audiobook, the radio show, but he was in Green Wing, he was in Spaced. As the artist who lived on the other floor. But he most likely, if you've ever seen the show Spy,
mm-hmm. Good show.
In the second season, they recast the stepfather.
Oh, okay.
The step, you know, because obviously
right.
the stepfather of the main character's kid. They recast it and literally, like, make a joke about how dramatically different he looks than the original actor. Like, these comments that he shaved his beard off.
And good.
Which is really remarkable, considering the first actor was, like, slightly ginger, and he's very much a brunette. But I think Mark Heap is kind of a, like, especially that opening scene would be phenomenal, like, because he's very good at being completely, blustered, I believe is the word I want. Like, flustered and blustered and discombobulated. In that uniquely British way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The same way that, like, Simon Jones can.
Right, yeah, I could see that.
Only Mark Heap would be age-appropriate to play the role.
Yeah, I'm still, I don't know about the other characters. I don't know who I would have play who.
I have to reread it. But this will give me a good reason to.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, like, I know obviously this is equally Terry Pratchett's story, but Neil Gaiman is just all over television right now. It's
mm-hmm.
between this and obviously American Gods over on Starz, which that first season was just amazing. Have you guys watched American Gods yet?
I haven't yet. I need to finish reading
the
book.
I haven't read the book, and I want to read the book.
Well, you should definitely read the book. Holy cow, yeah, no, again, you're, like, living in an area that a lot of it takes place.
Yeah.
But, I'm like anybody from, like, who's lived, like, you know, north of 10 in Wisconsin needs to read that book. But The adaptation's really good, and of course, you know, it's Neil Gaiman's executive producing and Brian Fuller's show running, so what do you expect? Even if neither Wednesday or Shadow look exactly the way I pictured them. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the casting. I think the cast is really solid. But, you know, and I believe that the actor playing Wednesday perfectly captures the character. He just, you know, doesn't look the way I pictured it. And Shadow, again, phenomenal actor. There's just one slight difference in that the character is described as having hair in the book, while the actor who plays Shadow has a completely shaved head.
My big issue that I'm having is actually with the book, and that's that the character's name is Shadow Moon, which is also the name of the grasshopper cyborg bad guy from Kamen Rider Black. So every time I hear Shadow Moon, I think of a grasshopper cyborg who is wants to take over the world on behalf of a sun cult. So, yeah.
Oh, Nicholas. But anyway, so it's, I mean, but okay, so tech, so that's, so American Gods, Good Omens, and then technically, because Lucifer is based off of a comic which was a spin-off of Sandman, he is technically considered to be the creator of the original material for Lucifer, even though it's really based off of it's loosely based off the events of the spin-off graphic novel written by someone else, and mm-hmm. they turned it into a police procedural. Technically, it is based off of Gaiman's character. So that means three TV series from with Neil Gaiman stuff in it. Even if one of them is kind of a stretch to wrap into this.
Indeed.
That's just wow. You know, but I mean, like, the thing is it's like the thing with both the American Gods, I think, adaptation and the Good Omens adaptation is that fans are actually genuinely getting what they wanted. And it's working. Uh-huh. Now, I mean, that doesn't always work out. You know, it's sometimes fans get what they want and it turns out to be not what they wanted and they didn't know. Mm-hmm. And so that's when it gets really frightening when you get to things like, say, the potential for an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie.
Oh, boy.
I like that. I slid right in there.
Oh, boy.
It took us on a journey of words. So, obviously, Lucasfilm, since it was purchased by Disney, has been on its, you know, pushing into Star Wars full speed ahead. They, you know, its episodes... Episode 8 comes out later this year. Next year, the Han Solo movie comes out, and the year after that is Episode 9. And the one thing is that we know that Disney intends on making more spin-off films. Obviously, we've already gotten Rogue One. The movie nobody wants is coming next year, which is the Han Solo movie, which is called How to Steal the Millennium Falcon and Be a Dick. And... that's what I'm calling it. Technically, it doesn't have a final title yet. which is weird when you think about it. Like, but anyways, there have been a lot of theories about what the next spinoff films are, because they've said that after Episode 9 they're going to make another spinoff film, but they haven't said what it was going to be. Now, the big thing that people have been theorizing for a while is that it would be an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie, and not just because every 2 weeks Ewan McGregor seems to come out and say, hey, I'd totally be up for playing Obi-Wan Kenobi again.
I don't know how I feel.
So, to bring us full circle, is that finally Lucasfilm is apparently developing an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie.
Well, guys, like, what are you gonna do with that? We already know, like, everything we need to do about Obi-Wan. Like, what more is there to cover?
Well, I mean, arguably, there's a 20-year gap in his story, and I mean, in theory, he could have. They've actually. There's a book about what happened to him within those 20 years. That I think is technically still part of Legends now because it, like, it came out right at the transition.
We have some canon material of what he was doing thanks to Star Wars Rebels.
Okay.
Like, he is in one of the recent seasons of that, so we have some canon material.
Hey, Nick, could you turn off your video because your audio is breaking up?
Okay.
Again, yeah, you're still here?
Yes.
Okay, you see, yeah, it is Nick then. It's not.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. Connections happen. And people at home can, you know, hear how the sausage is made as Skype is our enemy tonight. The original plan was to do a full video episode, and everything has gone wrong in doing that. Literally
basically.
Everything. Oh, you sound nice and clear again. All right.
Yay.
So I think that there's potential for a good Obi-Wan Kenobi movie, I think.
I'm not saying that there isn't potential for it. I would never say that. I'm just, yeah, I don't. I get. I just don't understand why.
Because they're gonna make.
It's gonna happen one way or the other, right? I mean.
Yeah, I mean, you want more people to fangirl over Ewan McGregor, so.
It's like I'm excited about the prospect. It's. So, you know, the funny thing is technically Ewan McGregor's not signed on yet. and there's no... the early days. I think that Lucasfilm was smart enough to know that if they put anyone else in that role, it would go badly.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no script yet, but Stephen Daldry is currently in talks at the studio to take on the project. As a director, and I think that, you know, this still might fall apart. This is early days, like anything with development deals, and then, like, this may not happen, you know. But I think it would be pretty cool if it did, if it's done well, you know.
I want it to be good.
You like Rogue One?
Yeah.
Right?
It's one of my favorite Star Wars movies.
Yeah. So. But many have pointed out that we didn't really need Rogue One because we had the opening crawl to Episode 4.
This is true.
So, like...
If they have a story, if they know the story they want to tell, then I'm all for it.
That's my thought. And so, I'm okay with it if it turns out to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like any of these, that's my opinion on all Star Wars, is that I'm okay with whatever they do as long as it's good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like Episode 3. I am okay with Episode 1, and I like half of Episode 2. I kind of hate the other half of Episode 2. Episode 2 is a concerning thing. It is both my favorite and least favorite prequel. Just depending on which scene you pick.
It has amazing tonal whiplash.
Yeah. But anyways.
And trying to watch it now, I can't make any sense of basically the entire third act. Like, once the Jedi show up, I can't make any sense of the movie after that.
Yeah, but there's some really cool explosions.
Sure.
I mean, that's, you know. And that's really the only movie where Natalie Portman has something to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is so underutilized in those films.
Well, here's the thing, though. She gets to actually, like, be on the front lines and take back her planet on her own at the end of Episode 1. So,
well, okay, so Episode
1, I appreciate the hell out of that.
All I know is that Episode 3 is I watch that and I go, where the hell happened to Padme Amidala from the last two movies?
Yeah, as soon as she gets Prager, she's useless.
I've become a walking trope.
Yep.
Yeah, I feel so... You know, it's like... And it's Natalie Portman. She's an amazing actress.
Mm-hmm.
She's got an Oscar.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, at least her career wasn't completely tanked by those movies. Hayden Christensen is a phenomenal actor, and it's over for him.
I think her career didn't tank because she was in Leon the Professional first.
Probably.
Like, as a child, she had, like, amazing acting chops, so, like, she got to recover. Even if she did have to do Garden State in the middle.
Yeah, but...
Garden State, the movie that every early 20s white guy thinks is deep.
Wait, it's not?
God, it's such a self-centered, selfish movie. Oh. With a manic pixie dream girl to boot.
But yeah, Obi-Wan, I want it to be
Poor
good.
Bilbo.
I really want Ewan McGregor in it. That would be cool.
Yeah, so yep. our official position, I think, at Nerd and Tie is we're all for it if it's a good movie. If it's a bad movie, shame. Shame. Speaking of shame, Nick.
Yeah. So, so Netflix posted something this last weekend, and a lot of people have seen Defenders. I have not watched it yet.
Defenders is amazing.
And I'm glad it was. But Netflix posted another original thing based on a comic book that wasn't quite as amazing. Just this last Friday, from when we're recording this, the live-action, American-produced Death Note movie went live on Netflix.
It's alive! It's alive!
Oh boy, you guys. Okay, so...
I'm gonna impress a girl by killing lots of people.
I went in wanting to like this. Because here's the thing, I ironically, it ended up being a lot like Ghost in the Shell, in terms of not understanding the source material at all and making just a bland, boring, terrible movie. But the thing is, I went in wanting to like it partly because, I'm going to be honest, maybe I'm wrong here, but I don't feel that Death Note and its themes and the philosophy and the ideas that it was trying to come across were as distinctly Japanese as Ghost in the Shell.
I can agree with you on that.
Like, yeah, I mean, like, the premise, for those of you who somehow missed out on the Death Note boom a few years ago, is a high school student gets a God of Death's notebook, and any name he writes in it, they die instantly. So the high school student decides to take it upon himself to rid the world of all evil by killing any criminals who he deems worthy of death. And as a result, the police start getting involved, and there's this kind of, and there's this cat and mouse game with this eccentric detective, and you kind of have these themes of what justice actually is. Is it vigilante? Is it the law? Is there a time when the limits of the law are too constraining? Is there a point when someone overreaches their vigilante perceived duties? It's a really interesting show. It's even more interesting when you consider that the manga was originally published in freaking Shonen Jump. You know, the magazine that brought us Dragon Ball did a philosophically heavy horror manga. But anyway, so... Death Note, yeah, I really thought Death Note had the potential. And some of the casting looked okay. Yeah, they set it in America. We had a white kid protagonist. That sucked. But...
Yeah, but, like... yeah.
It's set in Seattle, though, so I don't know.
Like The Ring.
L, the British detective from the comic, was changed into an American, African-American character. Okay, that's fine. There's, I mean,
Elsa,
like.
did, you know, see, I've never actually watched or read Death Note. I'm gonna admit, but L's a detective.
L is a detective. L is
L
a
is a
super.
detective?
L is a super eccentric detective. He's a recluse and a real weirdo.
He looks like Robert Smith.
That's kind of why. That's kind of what's interesting about. He's. I mean, like, he sits down like an asshole. Like, he never sits down like a normal person. He always perches himself somewhere, and he's constantly eating sweets.
Well, clearly he should have been played by Benedict Cumberbatch. Oh my God.
That's actually not terrible.
Everything about Sherlock makes sense now.
Oh
Look at
my
the hair.
gosh.
So anyway, yeah, so there's your source material. Well, what do we get? The first 20 minutes of Netflix Death Note are actually kind of fun because it's final Death Note destination. Rather than that's the thing. So that God of Death I mentioned earlier is a character in the original manga and anime, but he's not really an active agent in the story. He is bored with his duty of ferrying people off to the afterlife, so he lets a high school kid have his notebook because he thinks giving a human godlike power will be interesting. This version of Ryuk, the Death God, played by Willem Dafoe, is straight up an evil demon who gives people death notebooks because, and then encourages them to kill people because why the hell not?
Yeah, that's dumb.
In the comic, when Light writes a name down, Light is the main character. People die of a heart attack instantaneously unless he writes a specific death for them. In this movie, there is one heart attack. Every other death Light orchestrates, is ridiculously over-the-top gory. And sadly, that's actually where most of the joy from the movie comes from. Like, the first person he kills is a school bully who he witnesses beating a kid up for lunch money. And then a ladder falls on the kid and makes his head explode.
Neat.
Oh my God. So yeah, then in
That is very Final Destination.
yeah,
Yeah.
oh God, yeah, all of the early deaths in the movie are these overly elaborate, someone trips on something or they drop a thing that causes this Rube Goldberg series of unfortunate events to occur and then makes the target explode in a pool of blood. And that's the entertaining part. Unfortunately, there's still another hour and 10 minutes on this movie.
Oh, jeez.
Jesus Christ.
And that's sadly, it's when L comes into the story that it starts to fall apart. Rather than playing L as an ultra eccentric, super lawful good character, he just comes off as an unhinged weirdo who literally needs this Japanese guy to sing him to sleep. Light gets a girlfriend who kind of has a death fetish, not unlike what happened in the manga and the anime. But in this version, instead of her being kind of ditzy and looking up to him for being this self-proclaimed god of justice, she is just as bloodthirsty and tries to outsmart him in coming up with ways to kill more people.
What? I feel like this is like what would happen if someone tried to vaguely describe to someone else the Death Note series and then make a movie based on that description.
And unfortunately, that's what it feels like. And what hurts is, like, even Light himself, you don't get the interesting version of Light because he just starts killing people and he's kind of getting a high from it, but you never have him actually being like as sociopathic as the one from the source material who starts calling himself the god of the new world. Like, that is an actual regular thing that Light calls himself in the anime. In this, he starts having second thoughts midway through the movie and is telling his girlfriend, "We're not the good guys anymore." You were never the good guys. You were killing people.
Yeah.
And it's just unfortunate because here's what hurts the most, though, is that even though it's an awful adaptation, I feel like there are ideas here that could have been a fun thing on its own. Like, you know, like a crappy adaptation, but still could have been a fun thing. But it's so rushed and it's so confused and it doesn't know what its plot wants to be that it's not good at anything. Like, ironically, I feel that if it was a series, like if it was a Netflix original series, then it might be a really entertaining bad adaptation instead of just a bad adaptation that's also a bad movie.
Yeah.
Well, it's an absolute shame, too, because, like, all of, like, in the source material, the best parts are Light and L having these cat and mouse games with each other, right?
Yeah.
In this, L basically figures out that Light is the killer almost instantly.
Well, he's good at his job.
L figures out Light is the killer almost instantly. There's no, like, cat and mouse logic games. But then when Light's girlfriend, spoilers, when Light's girlfriend kills the Asian guy who sings L to sleep, L goes off.
No!
L immediately goes off the deep end, gets a ginormous Blade Runner looking gun, and then chases Light through the street with it.
Is it raining?
No.
Is it? Okay, because I was hoping for, you know,
full on Blade Runner? No. Yeah, yeah, no, he just chases him with it, and then someone sees him chasing this. So someone in Seattle sees this black man chasing this white teenager down with a gun. And, because that's not a really unfortunate image. He's like, "You have to stop him. That man is Kira." Because they still call the killer Kira in this, which makes no sense, by the way.
Yeah, why?
In the Japanese, he gets the name Kira because it sounds like the English word killer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In this,
he's just really a big fan of Deep Space Nine.
No, it's so much stupider. Light is talking to his. It's dumber. It's actually dumber. Light is talking to his girlfriend, and he's like, "We got to come up with a calling card, like a nickname." I was thinking Kira, because in Russian, Kira means light. Also, it sorta means killer in Japanese. Which it doesn't.
That was my soul dying.
It was, again, like, there were just too many ideas.
I'm just a husky now.
None of them are executed well. Willem Dafoe is fun. Like, his his death god is like over the top and hilarious, and he's nothing like the character from the manga. But he looks like him and he eats apples, but beyond that, that's it. But he's fun to listen to because he's like, because it's Willem Dafoe, and he's like, "Come on, kid, write a name down, come up with a way to kill him. There you go."
Like, I imagine that Willem Dafoe just says that to people normally,
right? Exactly. So it was. It was a real bummer because it really should have. It's not. This is not one of those anime adaptations that I feel like an American studio was just automatically going to bungle it. And I do want to say, despite the fact that I'm taking a big crap on this movie, I don't think that just because it's an American adaptation means it's going to be terrible.
Oh, no.
I have a poster for Edge of Tomorrow in my room. And that is an American adaptation of a manga that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the manga more, but the movie was still pretty good. It was really disappointing. I don't feel that it was unfair to think that the movie could have been good. I think it had a lot of elements that that should have been able to be turned into something really neat, and unfortunately, they didn't get there.
Yeah. Well, it's too bad.
It really is.
I think I mean, to be fair, I think since the first trailer, we all kind of determined that this was not going to be a good adaptation. Like, I don't think anyone's shocked that that thing that looked kind of janky ended up being Yankee.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't want to judge it too harshly on the trailer. I even thought that the trailer, what they showed in the trailer actually looked like they were going to, like, be kind of sincere toward the source material, but they weren't. They didn't get it at all.
That's where you made your first mistake.
I mean, I think it was more sincere in trying to adapt things than Ghost in the Shell was, but...
Ghost in the Shell just wanted to recreate, like, two or three specific scenes and didn't really care about the rest of the movie.
I'm about to say, Ghost... Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Ghost in the Shell, which I did not pay to see, by the way. Normally, I don't advocate saying that, but no, I refuse to pay to see it. I'm glad I didn't.
I haven't seen it, but I've seen all the clips replicating the iconic scenes.
And that's what it is.
If I wanted to watch an American rip off iconic scenes from Ghost in the Shell with no care about the actual Ghost in the Shell story, I could go watch The Matrix, which is actually decent.
Yeah, but that's the thing. The Matrix still has, like, heavy plot and hard sci-fi big ideas about technology and humanity's attachment to it. Ghost in the Shell is almost literally the RoboCop remake, but with Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, the RoboCop remake also didn't need to happen, but
That was another. I mean, thematically, it's almost the same thing where they completely missed the point of the original.
Yeah.
And the entire thing is about being a human is so special.
Yeah.
You take one of the biggest pieces of transhumanist sci-fi ever put to film and you change the core theme to being a human is special.
I think that Ghost in the Shell was doomed from the beginning because the concepts of identity are at its core, and when you strip out part of the whole questions in, like, if you watch the original Ghost in the Shell, if you watch the movie,
the Oshii movie,
the 90s movie, it's like Japan intentionally doesn't look like Japan. Like, it's the entire set pieces are a question of identity and what it means to be, you know, a thing, you know, like, is Japan still Japanese if you remove, you know, everything Japanese about it? And I guess, and, you know, the funny thing is that they could have, like, and I know that they pretended to sort of do something like that.
They do, and they handle it the most tone-deaf way possible.
But, like, the whole thing is that the reason why the Major's an interesting character is because she's a voluntary participant in the original text, you know? She's stripped away her humanity, but it was entirely voluntary that she put herself in that robot shell. And then
that, and for that matter, it's shown as an uncomfortable thing, but it's not shown as an awful inhuman thing. Transhumanism, the very idea of that is that technology brings about our next step in evolution.
Right. And so, like, they could have even done a whitewashed Ghost in the Shell that still accurately portrayed that tale, but instead they, like, it was something that was done to her, and they made it like almost like a rape metaphor, and I'm like, this is no, like, I mean,
and it's so tone deaf because they spend the entire third act of that movie insisting that this white woman's name is Motoko, and it's super, super uncomfortable. It's super uncomfortable, and, like, the script is completely tone deaf, unaware of the thing that they're implying is bad, i.e. taking this woman's Japanese-ness away from her, is literally what they did to her.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So, like, I think that, you know, because part of the whole questions is the concept of self, and if you don't have that narrative of the person going through that experience from beginning to end, you lose the whole element. But that's, like, the American remake, So does, like, but the interesting thing about the original Japanese version is you partner that with a theme that is written in an ancient Japanese dialect. Like, the choral theme is in a Japanese language no longer spoken in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it pulls on, like, the soundtrack pulls on a concept of Japanese identity that doesn't exist anymore, not even in the modern world.
They use that song in the live action movie, by the way.
They do? Well, they probably don't understand it.
Of course they don't, because nothing they did with any understanding of what it was they were referencing. Beginning to end, that's that entire movie, is they don't actually get it.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating. And, at the end of the day, taking it back to the original topic, that's... Ghost in the Shell was a lot like, really set the theme that Death Note carried through of whitewashed versions of manga that don't understand the source material at all.
Like,
I
think whitewashing's a problem, but you could still make a good movie that's problematic if you understand the themes. Like,
exactly.
Then it becomes a problem with the movie, not a bad movie, but this is just, like, this sounds like Death Note is. Like, I have not seen Death Note yet. But it sounds like they've just fundamentally misunderstood the entire point of the original text, thus making it completely stupid as an adaptation.
Mm-hmm. And that's, they did. They completely missed the point. It really is a shame, because it's doable. And I know it's doable because the Japanese made 3 live-action Death Note movies. And they're good.
So,
the special effects are bad, but the movies are good.
Yeah, so we should...
Anyway,
jump on forward, because we've been here for a while, and talk about the convention scene.
Mm-hmm.
And let's start out with something a little crazy. So this last weekend was the Avalon Expo in Newfoundland, Canada, which I believe is in the St. John's, which is also the setting of television series Republic of Doyle. Anyways, you have to be there to understand. There's a reference.
Not allowed.
Anyways, I mean, it literally took the convention literally was there. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
anyways, Avalon Expo brought on some pretty big names. Brought on Colin Baker. Brought on René Auberjonois. You know, like,
nice
big names. And they've been going for a few years. I think their first year is in 2015. So this is this would be like year 3. So, you know, nothing to shake your head at. Well, in the middle of the convention, organizer Jeff Powers, the head of the convention, apparently disappeared. Like, on Saturday night, just vanished. And Sunday of the con, no one knew what happened to him. Now, let me explain how much he disappeared, as in a missing persons report was filed.
Wow.
He has been found. He is alive and well. But pretty much the world knew about it because René Auberjonois posted to Twitter, and I quote, "Here, Avalon Expo, something fishy going on. Promoter Jeff Power seems to have disappeared. Not good."
Well, no.
He's honest.
Good.
All right, and apparently, René Auberjonois said, "Yep, we're being stiffed, and he's run out on the hotel bill, so this is a total clusterfuck." That was Odo saying clusterfuck. That happened. So, the convention organizers are the staff had no clue where he was, and like a lot of people like assumed the worst. But apparently he's okay. Like, I don't know. It's a really weird story. It's the family's apparently his family's not releasing any statements about what happened to him. Like, we don't know if I've heard something about him taking a fall or something. Like, there's some weird stuff going on, and it's hard to tell how much of it is people covering themselves and how much of it is true. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
This is just weird. Like the big assumption for a really long time is just that he was running out on everything. You know what I mean? Like that's what everybody went to first.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe that is what happened. Maybe he panicked and was worried about money and, you know, tried to run and hide. Or maybe something bad happened to him. Like there are so many directions this can go, just depending on who you believe. I will tell you that Rene Auberjonois apparently hasn't, you know, at least last I checked, as of this morning, hadn't bought the story where something happened to him. Because he he was still ranting about it.
Something tells me this wasn't his favorite con.
Yeah, well, like there's allegations of him running out of power, of Jeff Power running out on the bill, and like maybe he did. It's Odo thinks he did.
Mm-hmm.
This is weird. Like a lot of people have come to Power's defense, but again, these are all people who are friends of his. Like St. John's ain't a big place.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That is a really weird story. I don't even know what to make of it.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. I mean, I've never. Well, you know, it all depends on really who you believe. You know what I mean? Like, if you believe the celebrities, the guy just ducked out and is making excuses. You know what
right.
I mean? And I can see that narrative making sense. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that narrative is really easy to follow. But like, it's apparently, yeah, he's still, like, talking about it this afternoon. Like, I was looking at Rene Auberjonois' Twitter feed.
Oh, Rene Auberjonois.
He was in the original MASH movie.
He was also the, one of my favorite movies, The Last Unicorn, which you can watch on Netflix.
As who?
He was the skeleton.
Oh.
He was the talking skeleton in the basement.
Oh, okay.
Unicorn! Yeah. That was him.
Neat.
The wine-swilling skeleton. Yeah. I love that movie.
Okay, so this is a crazy stuff. Like, I'm looking through the Twitter feed involving the Avalon Expo stuff. So, apparently the official story is that Jeff Power, the Avalon Expo organizer, went for a walk on this trail, on the East Coast Trail, and fell and hurt himself and didn't have his phone on him. Now, that could be true, but there's a theory that people are floating that, like, people are, like, they're more concerned that he decided to, quote-unquote, go for a walk on the East Coast, Coast Trail in the middle of his convention, considering the middle-aged male suicide rate in that area.
Yeah, legit reason to be...
So
worried.
I will say if that read on the situation, which, and that would explain why people are being tight-lipped, is that if that's the situation, I hope that Jeff Power gets all the help he needs. And there's some potentially really weird stuff going on here.
Hmm.
Wow.
Wow, indeed.
Wow, of course, Rene Auberjonois still hasn't gotten paid. Like, okay, so, like, I have all this, like, sympathy for Jeff Power, but, you know, it still doesn't say much for a convention if, like, I don't want to, I want everybody to be physically safe in this story. I want everyone to be okay. But I am saying it does not bode well for Avalon Expo as a convention if they haven't paid their guests.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm.
And, like, Jeff Power, if you are listening to this, your life is not over if your convention fails.
Yeah.
We know that better than anybody.
I see that. I go by the site of that old hotel every single day. Oh. Oh. It's in my neighborhood. Oh. Anyways. So, yeah. It's... That's messed up. We need to talk about something less messed up. Gen!
Yeah!
Get us out of here, Gen!
Let me take us back in time to this past weekend.
The same weekend.
And to Madison, Wisconsin, where the three of us all attended GeekCon.
Woohoo!
Yeah, hey!
But we didn't do a live episode there!
No!
Because I forgot to request panel space.
Well, and Stop we were down. All busy and stuff and things.
Because
Nick and I were both working art tables. You were working an ambassador table for another con. And then we were also doing panels for Takoyaki Entertainment and just so much stuff.
Takoyaki stuff was great, guys.
Thank you.
I got to go to the talk show. I was obviously a participant in Match Game as a guest panelist, but I got to see one of the two Whose Line Is It anime panels, the rated R one, and all of those were phenomenal.
I really enjoyed all the panels we did. I especially enjoyed the interviews that I got to do.
Yeah, the interviews were great because you had Brad Swale and Jeff Nimoy on.
Yeah. So I got to talk to. I actually got to talk to the star of the actual Death Note. I mean, and that was lots of fun. And, you know, hitting Jeff Nimoy, telling all sorts of stories from... didn't really talk to him much about Trigun. Really mostly talked about his memories of working on Digimon. Because he had a lot of really interesting insights in, you know, being the showrunner on that for two whole seasons. And, I guess 2.5 seasons, really. And then... the work that he did on the new Digimon show that he's not directing, and how weird that is. It was just really fun. He even did the Tentomon voice without being prompted, because I never prompt guests for voices because I just think that's rude. But sure enough, he did it. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, Brad Swale even got to chew out someone in the audience for trying to well actually him, which was hilarious. For me, anyway. No, I had a lot of fun this weekend.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, it was good.
It was a good weekend.
Mhm.
And Robert Axelrod was totally physically in the building.
I really, like I said, I've had a really long last month or so, I needed this con to go well, and it did.
I will say the one problem I had with the talk show, Nick, is that you weren't wearing a baseball cap.
Oh, well, That's,
everyone else is wearing a baseball cap. They came prepared.
Well, I'm just not that kind of guy, I guess. Guess I'm just not the baseball hat kind of dude. I'll say my aside from the technical difficulties that I need to fix up, like my biggest issues were entirely just things where I need to plan better for next time. And other than that, I was really happy with how things went.
Yeah, and Tagiyaki is, you know, still pretty new, so
true.
We're still like working out all the kinks, but it's fun. And at GeekCon was highly successful for that. And if you weren't at GeekCon but want to see like what we did, you can totally catch it on the Tagiyaki Entertainment
YouTube
channel. Those videos should be up sometime soon. I'm not sure about the timeline on that.
I was gonna say, it took you a while to get the No Brand Con episode up.
Yeah, that was it'll depend on how busy I am, because I'm kind of the de facto video editor right now.
I'm just saying, Match Game should go up because it was amazing.
Yeah,
I heard it was really good. Everyone
will understand why Steve Buscemi.
I want to edit that one just so I can just so I can see what I missed. It'll be good times.
I'm very proud of how I contributed to that.
Good to know. I'm looking forward to it.
So general consensus is,
you know, GeekCon was good. GeekCon was so you know, we know some, you know, there was some organizational shakeup stuff ahead of time, which we're not going to go into. But overall, at convention, the place, you know, it was a lot of fun. GeekCon remains one of my favorite conventions, and probably will be. And it's honestly, I've been feeling burnt out on conventions for a while. It's, you know, I do a bunch of them, and I haven't always had the best time. But this last weekend for me was amazing and re-energizing, and pretty much reminded me why I go to these things. Like it was a phenomenal experience for me, and it's. You know, GeekCon, they've been limited in growth ever since they've started scheduling themselves opposite Wizard World Chicago, which is only like 2 hours away. Honestly, it was just a ton of fun. Like,
yeah, I had a really good time.
Yeah, the only downers that, like, the only bad parts that I can think of were just due to, new staffers handling stuff.
Yeah, well, there was some,
and like that.
Yeah,
that was most of the kinks that I saw. It was just new people figuring it out, and you're always gonna have that.
And yeah, if people are curious about, like, when we're talking about problems, you know, like especially the artist community has had some issues with some of the way things are handled this year, and I think that will right itself going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Same.
I think the lessons have been learned by people in their positions, and hopefully we will see an improved situation there going forward. But overall, the convention itself is still really great, and I'm hard pressed to find a better convention I can think of that I am not helping run.
I had a lot of fun. Nice. I'm really happy I went.
Yeah, it's. This is GeekCon is my favorite convention that I in no way contribute to.
GeekCon is one of my go-to feel-good cons, so yeah, I agree. I had a lot of fun.
So yeah.
So.
GeekCon was the thing. We should go to the mailbag.
Aw, yeah.
Nick, I think you found something in there, didn't you?
There he is. There's one letter, but it's a big one. So let's.
Huge. Don't strain yourself picking that up.
It's kind of heavy. It actually is kind of heavy.
Lift with your legs, man.
So ow. Oh, the bruise on my ankle just got worse. Anyway.
No.
Anyway, this is from the Random Ramblings Man, and the subject is back again. Most excellent nerds with ties. It has been far, far too long since I wrote a mailbag to this podcast, so fair warning, this is a big read. Before I get started, and at running risk of being out of date for this comment, hello, GeekCon. Yep, sorry, you missed it.
Well, I mean, it would have been appropriate if we had done a live episode there.
Had we done the episode, yeah.
This is the episode for that week.
Hope everyone's having fun and having a fun, safe time this weekend. I think we did.
We did.
Yeah.
Let's dig into the genuinely nasty and awkward first. Oh, do we have to?
Yeah, I didn't include the Nazi in our rundown, but I guess we can.
Do we want to? Okay, sure.
We're going to go for it. We could talk about the Nazi.
Yeah, let's talk about the Nazi. The cacophony of chaos surrounding the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville left me feeling like someone had whacked me in the unmentionables of the steel I-beam, and learning that a prominent cosplayer like Alyssa Norris stood with the white supremacists did little but aggravate that feeling. That said, I stand with those wanting to keep white supremacists and their supporters out of the cons, and I hope the community at large pays attention to those espousing or supporting such views and ensure that they receive less exposure and support. Amen to that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, this is super messed up when you consider that Alyssa Norris was actually, George Perez used her as a model for New 52 Supergirl.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That's gross. That's
so gross.
That's extremely gross. Sorry. And it's even more tragic since the Supergirl TV show is so focused on love of immigrants and...
She is an illegal immigrant.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Well, it just boggles my mind because part of the entire point of cons is to be inclusive. Everybody can have a safe space at a convention, you know, type of thing.
Well,
cishet white people, I tell ya.
Yeah, god damn it, yo. It's like, I don't know, it's like the whole thing just it feels so gross, and I hope she's just completely done in this community. Like, she's tried to, like, feign, like, oh, it's just along for the ride with, like, some Southern nationalist friends. I'm like, you have Southern nationalist friends. Like,
yeah.
Your husband is literally holding a shield with an iron cross on it, chanting Nazi slogans. If you cannot pretend that you were along for a ride and didn't know what was happening. Like,
well, Nazis, how did I end up here?
Like, I'm just saying, I would be pretty, you know... If my wife were a Nazi, I'm pretty sure I'd know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, if Nick,
they try.
If Rana was a Nazi, you would know, right?
I think I would be pretty aware.
Yeah, again, if your boyfriend Eric was a Nazi, you would know, right?
Yeah.
We all know our significant other's political views and whether or not they're pro-genocide.
Yeah, when you start yelling, I mean, it's hard to feign ignorance when you were yelling Sieg Heil, you know, it's just...
Yeah, it's like, oh, so my favorite thing is I had to ban this guy from the comment section, because again, we have a no bigotry policy on Nerd and Tie, and he was just like, well, if you keep, you know, thinking you see Nazis everywhere, you know, whatever, I'm like, dude, it's really easy to spot Nazis when they're carrying iron crosses and screaming Nazi slogans.
Uh-huh.
Like...
Yeah,
this isn't
they stick
a,
out like a Nazi thumb.
It's not an overreaction. It's an apt description. Like, if someone yells white power, they might be a white supremacist. If someone yells Nazi slogans, like Jews will not replace us, they might be a Nazi. I'm just saying.
Probably.
Safe bet.
Safe bet, probably a Nazi.
Yeah, it's so Alyssa Norris is a Nazi, and so I don't know if I'd say she's a Nazi. She's at the very least a Nazi sympathizer. Someone criticized me for saying that. I'm like, she is clearly sympathizing with someone who says they're a Nazi.
And to quote a better person than me, when you are silent in a when you take the side of silence in a clash between the oppressor and the oppressed, then you are taking the side of the oppressor.
But
There's
also, she wasn't being silent. She was there. She's part of a group of white nationalists. She rode down with her Southern national. Like, I'm sorry, but does she not realize that when she says Southern nationalists, we know that she means like the Klan, right? Like, that's like, what the hell do you like? If you're gonna defend yourself, don't like. Oh, you know, if you're gonna lie and say you didn't know what was going on, don't admit that you were voluntarily with a bunch of people you knew to be racists. It just, it does not gel. It does not blend. It does not mix. We should keep reading the letter.
Anyway, yeah, let's get to the we've spent enough time Nazi talking about these fucking
I
Nazis.
did not see that
Anyway,
coming.
now on to the hilariously nasty, like the Joker solo movie currently under development. I don't know about anyone else, but the prospect of seeing more of the DC extended dumpster fire's take on the Clown Prince of Crime makes me yearn for a 24-hour marathon of Battlefield Earth. Even if Jared Leto apparently is not reprising the role here, and to think we still get to see Leto's Joker in Suicide Squad 2, Gotham City Sirens, and the untitled Joker and Harley Quinn film.
Okay,
I've got nothing
yeah.
more to add. I
So
mean,
the Joker prequel will not have Leto in it because it's may not even be in the DC. I don't think it's going to be in the DCEU, which
yeah,
is
it
weird.
seems like they're kind of
But
slowly moving away from the DCU.
well, they're not because Wonder Woman made money.
Right.
But like
But I can't, but naming a
they're
Flash
going
movie
nuts.
Flashpoint, just
Well,
saying,
here's the
it's
thing
a
with the
really
Joker
easy
movie.
way.
Who is it for?
Exactly.
And it's not like they're literally not doing a Joker origin over on Gotham.
Oh.
Jerome, the whole like, there's a whole
Yeah,
thing.
they no, I'm going, oh, like ironically, like oh.
Yeah, like I don't who like yeah, like there are two things I don't understand. This Joker movie and the standalone Flash movie. I understand having a separate DCEU Flash, but we don't really need a Flash movie.
Well, now that standalone Flash movie though has been retitled Flashpoint, so who knows?
Yeah, because we didn't just do Flashpoint in the television series.
In the television series or that cartoon movie a few years back
Yeah.
either. Nope.
And you know, it's like I don't understand like there are so many DC characters who don't have their own shows. You know what I mean? And I understand that the movie version is independent from the TV series, and I can handle that. But if you've got Barry Allen running around TV, you don't need to give him a solo movie. Just Hulk him. Have him show up in all the team-up movies. You know?
Everyone
Like,
knows who he is and what his deal is. You don't need to.
yeah, use that space to fill in, you know, anyone else. Well, I mean, we're already getting an Aquaman movie. Cyborg, you know, they want to give him his own movie. Let's do that. I don't know if Cyborg's going to be any good.
I'm not. I wouldn't know. I'm.
That's apparently like the core part of the reshoots were making Cyborg not terrible.
Oh, good. That's a good sign.
Not CGI, but just like, well,
Still not a great.
what is, well, apparently they made him way super serious in the original version, in the original cut of the film.
Yeah, because when I think of characters in the DC universe who are super serious all the time, Cyborg is who comes to mind. Jiminy Mimini. Sorry, I'm
Well, I've,
gassed or
maybe they
flat.
got him confused with Deathlok, and you know,
Anyway, good
they
God.
thought they were Marvel for a minute.
Hey, speaking of Gotham, Random Ramblings Land says he gave up on Gotham because it just wasn't worth it. Good.
Right, keep
Good.
reading then. Good. You shouldn't watch it. It's bad and terrible.
And now on to the good. We have a trailer for Batman vs. Two-Face, and despite the passing of Adam West and the recent grossness of William Shatner, I can't wait for the sequel of my favorite Batman outing of last year.
I agree.
No, I'm on board. It'll be fun. I can't wait. It'll be great. And then I watched The Defenders last Friday, and while I'm aware it's gained a divisive reception among critics and fans alike, I enjoyed it from start to finish. Perhaps it'll take a second rewatch to appreciate the criticisms levied against the show, but for the time being, it was a nicely made entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it was nice to see Jessica Jones and Luke Cage again.
I agree with that.
That's fair.
It's I haven't seen the negative. Of course, I don't often read many reviews, you know, from other people. So, like, I hadn't heard anything terrible. I thought Defenders was, you know, we touched on this earlier in the episode, but I think Defenders was a solid adaptation. I love the way that it does a really good job of handling the different tones of the source materials of the shows for the four, you know, leads.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the first couple episodes, you feel like you're on Luke Cage in the Luke Cage scenes, and you feel like you're on Jessica Jones in the Jessica Jones scenes.
Yeah, I was told they did different lighting for the different characters, and I thought that was kind of fun.
It visually feels like their own shows as they get introduced, and then it kind of melds into one, but without ever feeling like it doesn't mesh. Like, it's not
as
like,
a stage
yeah.
performer, I like the different light themes. I think that's really cool. Yeah.
So it's I love Defenders. And I will say that everything, like, for people who didn't like Iron Fist, everything that made Danny Rand irritating as a central protagonist becomes a feature when you throw him with three characters who literally call him out on all the bullshit he got away with in his own series.
That's fantastic. I might look forward to it just for that.
Yeah.
And then okay. With the formal announcement of Obi-Wan Kenobi spinoff film and the growing post-Disney Star Wars cinematic universe, all I can say is, I hope Ewan McGregor comes back. He's just itching to be in a Star Wars film. Everyone agrees is good. And no, I'm with that. I like we said before, we want to be good. Ewan McGregor coming back would be A+ in my book.
Yeah,
I'd like
that. I have many criticisms about the prequels. None of them are criticisms of Ewan McGregor or his performance. His being cast as young Obi-Wan in those prequels was the best thing about the prequels. And he is arguably, like... And there's no one in the world more excited to be in Star Wars than Ewan McGregor.
I don't know. Have you seen the interviews with Diego Luna?
Okay, that's
like,
true.
I don't think anyone's more excited than Diego Luna. He described watching Rogue One as amazing because he was watching a new Star Wars and then he forgot he was in it until he was on screen. Anyway, here that's all until next Fortnight. Pleasant weekend to my friends at Nerd and Tie and everyone else attending GeekCon. As always, stay random.
I do want to say we originally were telling people we were going to try to do a Gorilla Live episode at the con, but we all just got way too busy.
We were busy and tired. And
it was mostly we were tired.
Like,
the thing is, when we do live shows, we do them really early in the con, normally. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then we were like, oh, we're going to do it Sunday. Like, we all thought that was a good idea. We got to Sunday on the con, and it was just like...
And we're all just
oh,
dead.
Oh, God, we're so tired.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we... Oh, I don't want to sit down and do a show. Well, because what people don't understand, it's like we were, like, you listen to the show, and right now we are an hour and 14 minutes in, but there was 45 minutes of pre-show before we started recording, of getting ready for the show. And before that, I spent a half hour doing the first version of the rundown before we tweaked it. And, like, it is a lot of work to do this show. That doesn't end up on the show. And so, like, we were looking at, like, hours of work. It was just, we were dead.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Emotionally and briefly physically.
Well, you know. And we're going to have to deal with all those resurrected revenants from the curse now. It's just a pain. You know, you die for 2 minutes, and it's technicality.
Yeah, no fun. I don't recommend it.
No.
But yeah, we should look at the Vomit Head Steve challenge.
We should do the Vomit Head Steve challenge. Not that I'm delaying, just so I can get the Hall of Awesome up in front of me. So the Vomit Head Steve challenge is, of course, the part of the episode in which I read a portion of a book, and the challenge to you, the listener, is to guess what book it is. If you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, we read your name aloud on the show. 2, we list your name on the website. 3, nothing else. Nothing else, you greedy bastard. Anyways, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamai, Zero, Renan, Senti, Cheesy McDamia, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Band, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lillisaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsy, Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, Keith Shizuo, Sakura Sunset, and that is it. Now, I'm going to read a part of a book, and if you can figure out what it is, you could be on that list. Like a person. And my book, of course, has decided to... I'm using an ebook right now. Has decided to go through the whole stages of reinitializing itself. There we go. Your sentence for this episode is, we won't go home till morning. And we did not. If you know a book that's from, go to nerdandted.com/contact and click on the Formy Forum, tell us. Or if you have anything else you'd like to say, do, dream of, or, you know, think of in your brain, ask Nick how he got so fly. Ask Gen why she is capable of flight only in very specific circumstances, those, of course, being on a plane. And ask me why I do random rambling crap at this point of the show off the top of my head at really high speed talking. Ask us any of other stuff. Just go to nerdandted.com/contact, or we can read your stuff. You could talk directly on the show yourself. We don't have to read it. We don't have to be your medium. You could literally hear your voice on the show if you leave us a voicemail at area code 414-375-0480. If you call that number, leave a little voicemail, we will play that audio right here, and you can hear your own dulcet tones cross the internet barrier and into the ears of all of those around you.
Indeed. Do it. Do it.
Do it.
Do it.
Do it. Do it. Do it.
Ah.
Do it.
Take your Jedi weapon and strike me down.
Hey, Palpatine, what should we do with this extra meat?
Stew it.
Oh, dear Lord. All right. So we should probably run away and do whatever needs to be done now.
Have a good night, everybody.
Again,
keep on spocking.
Say who we were.
Oh. I got caught up in watching a cooking video. But I was Genjamin.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And someday I might still be Nick Izumi.
And we are Nerd and Tie. And remember, you can always subscribe to Nerd and Tie on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, on anything you take an RSS feed. Remember, you can subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/Tregorn, or you can find Nick's videos, which are on his channel at youtube.com/Nick Izumi. You can support us on various ways, either by donating directly to the show through a sponsorship, which you can find sponsorship information on nerdandtie.com, or you can donate to our legal fund at nerdandtie.com, gofundme.com/nerdandtie, or you can directly support us. Gen sells things under the name Ocelot Dude all over the internet. And Nick has a Patreon at patreon.com/Nick Izumi. I have a Patreon at patreon.com/Tregorn, with a G in the middle there. And you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/nerdandtie. Follow us on Tumblr at nerdandtie.tumblr.com. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdandtie. And I think that's it, guys.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
And remember, we're dancing somewhere. You just can't see it right now.
Tell me alone. Faith at the known. Tell me alone. I don't have a home.